Hi, I'm Laura Cox Kaplan. Welcome to She Said, She Said podcast. Here on this podcast, we talk about the building blocks and the micro habits that help us create real and lasting influence. What do I mean by that? Well, we're talking about the kind of influence that helps you achieve your goals and whatever it is in life that you want to accomplish. But perhaps most importantly, it's the type of influence that helps you create real impact and that enables you to truly thrive. Hey friend, welcome to episode 287. If you're anything like me and you love your pajamas and your loungewear as much as I do, you will love this conversation today. Amy Voloshin is this week's guest. She is the co-founder of Philadelphia-based PrintFresh. Now, if that name is new to you, trust me, friend, your sleepwear game is about to get a major upgrade. I have been a big fan of this brand ever since I discovered them. I think it was actually during COVID, and that was true for a lot of people. In fact, the PrintFresh brand got a real boost as a result of COVID, but it played out much differently than what the founders had actually intended, but I'm going to let Amy tell you that story. Now, PrintFresh has a particular design aesthetic, which is bold and colorful and really playful. It's fantastic. It is almost too cute to be restricted to sleepwear, which is probably why Amy has branched out into a few apparel pieces, including some amazing dresses that she's designed with Jen Soar, who is the founder of Pencil and Paper Co. And if you don't follow Jen on Instagram, you should, because she has a fantastic Instagram. Now, interestingly, and not dissimilar to so many entrepreneurs that we've talked to as part of this series, designing PJs wasn't exactly on Amy's list of potential business ideas. And yet, her previous background and her training and her design work ultimately led her to that point. Now, I'm not going to spoil any more of the story so that you can actually hear it directly from Amy. But what I will tell you is that this conversation is part of our She Said, She Said podcast, the Southern Sea Collaboration series. The advice and perspective that Amy shares in this episode spans everything from pivoting in your business to picking the right partners to collaborations to the parallel, and I think sometimes competing tracks of brand consistency and creativity and how you balance between those things. But here's the thing, even if you are not in the clothing and apparel design space, so much of the advice that Amy shares, I think will resonate with you. Now, a couple of additional details. PrintFresh has twice received the Inner City 100 Business Growth Award. It achieved a remarkable, truly remarkable growth since 2018, making it the number one ranked company on the IC's 100 list. Amy also participated in the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Businesses program way back when they were just starting out as well. Amy and I also talk about some of the challenges associated with leaning into your core values, especially when there's a price tag associated with those. One more thing that you will love about today's episode. There is a promo code that Amy has so graciously and so generously included for you. You will find that at the end of the episode and in the show notes. And let me tell you, friend, this is a great way to get a jump start on this year's Mother's Day gift shopping, or maybe a birthday gift, or just something for you. And you know, if you're anything like me, I kind of like to stock up. So you might want to pick up a few extra things so that you have some gifts on hand when you need them. So without delay, friend, here is episode 287 with the co-founder of PrintFresh, Amy Voloshin. Amy, welcome to She Said, She Said.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, I am so happy to have you because I am not just a bit of a fangirl. I am a full-on fangirl of your brand, and I have been since I found you during COVID. So I am really excited to talk to you, and I'm also excited that you are part of our 2024 The Southern Sea She Said, She Said podcast collaboration series with entrepreneurs from the network. So welcome, and thank you.
Thank you.
Really happy to have you. So let's jump in and talk about how you built this business. You, as I understand it, did not necessarily aspire to become a designer of pajamas and loungewear.
I definitely would have never seen that coming for me in my life. I knew I always wanted to work in fashion and I love textiles, but that was definitely a category that just never crossed my mind. Like as I was working in the industry for about 15 years before starting this.
How did you get your start? I know you studied design at the Rhode Island School of Design, but how did you actually get started?
Well, I was lucky to have some really great internships when I was in college. I worked for an amazing fashion designer called Liz Collins, and we did amazing knitwear together. And she just had such a great sense of color and fun. And she was an amazing mentor to me. And then I was lucky to get a job at Urban Outfitters immediately upon graduation. And that is like where I really learned so much about design and the industry and kind of like all of these like big ways of doing things after working for a small designer.
Yeah. What was your job at Urban Outfitters? Were you in a senior role or were you in a more junior role?
So that was like my first real job out of college. So I was a design assistant and the team at the time was incredibly small and we were designing for Free People and Urban Outfitters. It was the same design team. We all worked in like a very small space. We had to share a computer and it was an amazing job because I got to learn about technical design, print design, embroidery. And the woman that I worked for was just so immensely talented. So I got to learn so much from her.
When did you start your own business?
Well, I worked there for a little bit. Then I worked in textile design for a print studio in New York for a little bit. Then I started my own textile line selling to fashion companies and did that for about 10 years. And then that's like when I started to get into having our own line.
Yeah. And so when you started your own line, you were starting with candles and stationery and other sort of types of products that you could put your design on. Is that...
Yeah, it's been a very winding road of how we got to pajamas and dresses, but it seemed like something that kind of made sense. We had been getting a lot of traction on Instagram when we had our textile design business, and everybody was always saying, hey, where can I buy that? Where can I find it? But because we were really just working behind the scenes, selling to big apparel companies, we never had anything that people could purchase directly from us, and because it's business to business and contracts and everything, we can never even really say where you could get it. So that's when kind of a light bulb went off for us. And we're like, maybe we should start making something. So we started with stationery because it seemed kind of manageable to start on our own. You know, we're a small business, self-funded, family run. I work with my husband. And we figured that would be a good place to start. So we started with a stationery. We exhibited at what used to be called the National Stationery Show, and all of a sudden got picked up by a bunch of stores, and it kind of just got rolling from there.
Awesome. So at what point did you decide, okay, maybe pajamas are the way to go?
Well, we had a bunch of prints that I kept on trying to put them onto stationery, and the scale didn't look quite right. Like, they didn't quite fit into, I mean, a notebook's quite small. Yeah. And we had these prints that we were loving, and it was just kind of like by good fortune that our sales rep at the time, she said to me, she was like, you know, maybe you should put some of these things on pajamas. So it was just this suggestion that, you know, I could have like ignored it and probably would have ended up doing something totally different. Yeah. But I was just so glad that she made that suggestion. We tried it out. I went to the factory in India to work on it. And as soon as I got there and saw the prototypes made up, I was like, wow, this kind of looks really good. And then we brought those prototypes back, went to a trade show, and instantly got such a great response. It definitely was like a sign that that was working.
Yeah.
Much better than stationery.
What was the very first design?
So the Bagheera was one of our first designs, and that's kind of like the pattern that we're most known for.
Yeah, now you have it in multiple colors, right?
Yeah, so many colors of it. And yeah, I just love wearing all of them. And yeah, so that was kind of like our big hit. And the flamenco design, which is one that we just re-released in a light pink color with elephants and flamingos, that was another one that was from that very first collection.
Amazing. So I know in reading a bit about the evolution and growth of your business that you originally thought you would focus on wholesale, but then the pandemic happened. So maybe walk us through what happened and how you guys pivoted.
Yeah, that was a very unexpected turn for the business. You know, we kind of were really focusing on wholesale. That was our main way of doing business. We had an e-commerce website, but we would maybe sell a few things a month. It was nothing to count on. And we didn't really know how to drive traffic to our website. And then when the pandemic happened, we had all of these orders that we had shipped out, and then all of a sudden everything came back. Mm. And I just remember being in our office by myself, all of these packages just lined up, piled up. And, you know, I just kept on saying to myself, what am I going to do with this? This is just, I mean, I don't know how you get yourself out of it. And luckily I had met somebody who, at an event, and he knew how to do digital marketing. And I thought, like, maybe there's something there. Maybe this person can help me. And we kind of together figured out with a few of our team members how to, like, really get online, how to create digital ads. And then all of a sudden we were able to start selling all of these things that were kind of piled up and we didn't know what to do with.
How long did it take? Like, from the point in which you have these piles of inventory, how quickly were you able to reduce that and really completely pivot your strategy?
Well, we sold through it so quickly, it was actually hard to replenish it.
Wow.
Quickly enough, because there were shutdowns in India where we manufacture. And so we had to really try to figure out how we could keep up with the demand that all of a sudden had started on our website. Wow. But it required learning so many new skills of how to merchandise the website. And we had to try to figure out how to put together so many different parts of advertising and emails and all of these things that we had no skills around.
Yeah. I mean, I know having a strong network is a really important, or it can be a really important component of sort of figuring out, especially when you're navigating a big pivot. Was that something that you had focused on and built and had a strong network at that point? Or was that something that you had to build then?
I think that we, at the time, because we were doing so much of our business in New York, we're based in Philadelphia. So most of our business was in New York and LA. And so we had a lot of connections in the industry, but none that were very specific to what we were trying to do, and not in our own city. But I had always been using a lot of resources like SCORE, which is an amazing organization of retired executives or people that are in between jobs who volunteer their time to counsel entrepreneurs and help you with business things. So I was really lucky to have a few mentors that I had been in touch with, you know, over the course of our textile design business, who I was able to call and lean on for things. And also I was in the Philadelphia Fashion Incubator. So I had a bunch of people that I could call and kind of get advice from.
Yeah. Any advice for others in terms of building that network and thinking about, you know, how to really solidify relationships with mentors, find those mentors in the first place, especially when you find yourself maybe going down a different path than what you had been originally?
Yeah, I think that there's just so, like, every city and area has different organizations. I think it's just about finding them and finding the right coaches and having an open mind and then keeping in touch with them, because really they're kind of relying on you to reach out and maintain the connection there. And I think just, you know, like, remembering to check in, to have conversations every, you know, couple months, just connect. And it's a great way to have that person that you can call when you just need somebody to talk to that has that expertise, whether it's in HR or marketing or whatever it is. I think it's so important to find those organizations And I also had done the 10,000 Small Businesses mm-hmm. program. I was in Philadelphia's wow. first cohort. And that was also a place where I was able to find other entrepreneurs and teachers and people that came in to speak with a class that also kind of helped build my network.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's really amazing. Let's talk a little bit about how you prioritize what comes next, right? You have a particular brand aesthetic, right? That's very unique to Print Fresh. You've got to work hard to keep that fresh, but consistent at the same time. And I've always been kind of fascinated by how do you maintain your creativity, but still stay consistent from a design aesthetic? Maybe talk a little bit about how you think about those two either competing or parallel dynamics in a business like yours.
I think that that's probably one of my biggest struggles because there's so many things we could do and I have so many ideas, especially being such a print-focused collection. Almost everything that we do is extremely printed and bright and colorful. And sometimes I just wish we did solids or something because it would just automatically go together.
You would be very bored with solids.
I think so. But I think it is incredibly challenging to have all of these vibrant prints and make sure that they all go together, have our mm-hmm. sense of whimsy and color, and that they work in the seasons that we're designing them for. I mean, it's one of those things where we just kind of have to come up with a bunch of ideas, see how they execute. We like to hang up everything on the wall in our office and just kind of edit down, try to make sure it all looks right. Some things just don't work or just don't, they might be beautiful, but they don't feel like us. But I think that it comes mm-hmm. down to just kind of that gut instinct and feeling, mm-hmm. and we just have to love it. And we just try to hope that our audience feels like it all looks good together and that it feels in the same energy.
Yeah. Talk maybe a little bit about the role of some of your collaboration partners. Jen Soar, who designed, I'm wearing one of your cute dresses that you guys rolled out a couple of years ago. She, of course, is the founder of Pencil and Paper. But what role does a collaboration partner play in maybe helping you sort of drive or steer where the designs may go with a particular collection?
Yeah, so we definitely have done a lot of collaborations. Jen is one of my favorite people to collaborate with. She just is the coolest and has such an incredible sense of style. So we love to work with her. And I think that collaborations are just such an important way to extend the brand and to get some ideas that we would have never come up with. So we have a lot of fun working together and kind of hearing about what she thinks could be great for the brand, finding a way to work together. Of course, collaborations always take maybe twice as long as our normal ones because there is a lot more back and forth and trying things and trying to find that perfect match of where both brands and people kind of come together in that perfect mixture of both of our senses of style.
So with the Jen collaboration, and I'm not sure how this applies to other collaborations that you've done. How do you think about, because you're looking at both the textile aesthetic, right, of the collaboration, but you're also looking at limited run pieces like this dress that I'm wearing, and there's several others that you guys have designed. Maybe how have you thought about, as you have continued to kind of evolve and incorporate additional pieces? I know size inclusivity is an important priority for you as well, but maybe how have you thought about that as you've continued to build out the number of products that you have?
Yeah, size inclusivity is like so important to every collection that we do, and it really informs some of the silhouettes that we approach. So every time that we're doing a collaboration, whether it's with Jen or a different brand, we just launched a collaboration with Lime Ricky. We're always looking for partners that really can embrace that kind of comfortable sense of dressing and styles that work across all different body types and sizes. We definitely love having a very full range from extra small to 6X in most of our styles. And then also in the sleepwear, doing petites and talls has been really, really fun. Mm-hmm.
Is it hard though to manage that much inventory?
It is. I think it definitely is one of the reasons why I think a lot of brands don't embrace a fuller size range, because it is hard to manage it. It requires really trying to figure out how to place your buys with making sure that you get the right number of each sizes. Mm-hmm. And factories have minimums for different sizes. So it's definitely, from a business standpoint and design standpoint, it takes a lot more effort. But I think that it's a really important thing to do, mm-hmm. especially because there's not a lot of really fun patterns and sustainable textiles like in these broader ranges of sizes. So that was something that was just incredibly important to us in starting the brand. But from a design perspective, mm-hmm. it is a much lengthier time to do it, because we fit first on a size small, and then we work with a 2X fit mm-hmm. model and have to go through a grading process. So it's definitely more time intensive, but I just think it's incredible to be able to have my friends, colleagues, family all be able to wear our items.
Yeah. Yeah. And I should say too, these are not just pajamas just for women. We have dressed all of the Kaplans in your holiday collection several years running. So we have the stripes, we have I can't even remember what last year's was, but the stripes was a family favorite, just by the way.
Oh, good. We have some really good holiday ones coming up soon.
Oh, I can't wait. So I know, as we just said, size, inclusivity is a value, but so is sustainability, which you just mentioned. Let's talk a little bit about how you sort of think about sustainability. You are working with a sourcing partner in India. Maybe talk a little bit about the challenges of working with someone who is so far away. How do you know what's happening on the ground to make sure that their values align with yours? Kind of talk us through that piece.
I travel to India twice a year, and usually for about 2.5 weeks each time. So I spend mm-hmm. a lot of time in the factory, and selecting our partners there was something that we took very seriously. I met with a lot of different factories that were all lovely, but trying to find the right one that had similar values to me was definitely a big search. And I love the vendor that we work with. The factory is beautiful. It's clean. It's light filled. They recycle the water. It's solar powered. Like, there's just so many like wonderful things about the space. So it's a place that I really look forward to visiting and spending time in. And I think that it's something that, as a small business, we have these opportunities to really choose very carefully. I think a lot of large corporations, they kind of work with who they work with because of price. But when you have your own small business, you can be very mm-hmm. selective in these choices and choose more based on values and looking for somebody who matches.
Is it hard to verify whether sort of what a partner is telling you is actually correct, that they're giving you the straight answer? Is that hard to verify when you're going through this process and looking at so many different entities to work with? Are there specific questions that you think someone should be asking when they are looking at that kind of collaboration?
I think the best way is to go frequently and just spend mm-hmm. an incredible mm-hmm. amount of time there. And if possible, having an agent that can spend a lot of time in the factory on a weekly basis there on your behalf. And also, there's all different kinds of auditing systems for ethical manufacturing. We use SEDEX reports. And so that gives you, that's when there is an inspection, usually like once or twice a year. And there's the most detailed report of every aspect of what's happening in the factory. And that's a great way of making sure that an outside partner is really evaluating all of the different things that are happening in the factory, and that there's corrective plans for if certain exits need to be cleaned up in a certain way, or just everything is totally compliant. So that gives you a very, very detailed report. And I think using those resources to truly verify that the factory meets your expectations is kind of the best way.
Yeah.
But spending time there is ultimately the best way.
Yeah. No, that makes so much sense. It's and clearly it's a big time investment in, you know, going to these places and actually spending the time there. Speaking of time, I know that you and your husband, Leo, who's also your business partner, you have two young kids. So maybe let's talk a little bit about prioritization and how, you know, I hesitate to use the whole work-life balance, you know, vernacular because it's so overused, but it's a thing, right? What are your tips or thoughts or sort of how do you make it all work for yourself and for your family?
I think it's a constant struggle. I don't know how anyone that runs a business ever feels like they're doing it right. I feel like, you know, some weeks are better than others with how we're able.
Right. Highs and lows.
Yeah. You just kind of like hope it all averages out. But despite working a lot and the pressures of having a family business, you know, we try to involve the kids in what we're doing and we try to get their opinions on things so that even if they see us working, that they're involved in the process. And we try to travel a lot as a family because that's a nice chance to unplug. And even if between their sports activities and our workload, at least then we get to unplug, be together, and spend some real quality time.
Yeah. I talked on last week's podcast a little bit about reentry because my family and I took a fairly unusual 16 days away. So we were in Europe for a full 16 days. It's a long trip, kind of like a, you know, march through time and history, which was more exciting for maybe some of us than others. At the same time, when you get back, reentering work can be so jarring, especially if, to your point, you've really unplugged. Do you have any tips for reentry after you've taken a little break? Because I know you guys just took a spring break trip as well.
Yeah, we just got back from Portugal. And I mean, I think that probably I have advice on what not to do based on how my first day back went. But I think taking time to catch up. I mean, there's so many emails and all this communication these days. I think taking a day or two to kind of be able to organize, get your to-do list going, clear the inbox, all of those things, I think really helps to kind of mentally prepare to enter into getting into that groove of meetings and the usual cadence of the week.
Yeah. And just being patient with yourself, right? Recognizing that reentry is going to be, you know, a thing, knowing that going into it and just giving yourself a little bit of space if you can, right?
Yeah. And working on the plane on the way back really helps too. You need to like start catching up on it when you have that focused time.
So, Amy, looking forward, can you give us some hints or maybe a little preview of what we can expect from PrintFresh over the next maybe few months or year?
Yeah, right now we have a bridal collection that's coming out very soon.
Wow.
And we also have a really special collaboration with the house that Lars built, which I think is incredibly beautiful. And I'm really looking forward to that.
That's exciting. Amy, this was amazing. I loved having a chance to get to know you a bit better. I loved meeting you at the Southern Sea this past summit, and really excited to have you involved with this collaboration series as well.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
I loved it. As promised, be sure to use the promo code SHESAID to get 20% off your purchase of PrintFresh for a limited time. I believe the code is good from now until Mother's Day or possibly the end of May. But if you are buying for your mom, why don't you just go ahead and take advantage of this generous offer now and get that taken care of. I promise you, she will love these pajamas and you will be her new favorite child if you aren't already. This episode also continues our collaboration series with the Southern Sea. So if you've missed any of the episodes in this series, I hope you'll go back and check them out because these women are truly, truly fantastic. You will find all of those episodes wherever you listen to podcasts. Oh, and one more thing. If you enjoyed the episode, I would be so grateful for a nice review. Those reviews signal to the algorithm that She Said podcast is something that you find useful and valuable. And I love getting your feedback. So if you have an extra minute, I would be truly, truly grateful. Until next week, friend, you take care, and I'll talk to you soon.